Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We speak into this atmosphere. We say, let there be light. Our title this month is Being is Everything, Creating a New Destiny for Yourself Through Self-Transformation. That's terminology that some people with a Christian background might not relate to, because we were taught, if any man's in Christ, he's a new creature, all things have passed away, you know, come to Jesus and you'll change. That's true for some people, but I can tell you through years of counseling, that's not true for most people. Just coming to an altar and saying a sinner's prayer, it might give you a conversion experience, but my feeling is from the scriptures that when people actually were changed or had an epiphany or conversion, it was nearly bigger than them. It was like Saul on the road to Damascus. It wasn't something that you could necessarily initiate. So if something spiritually happens to you that sort of does take you next level, that may be bigger than you. That may be the circumstances in your life or whatever. What I'm talking about is knowing that if change is necessary, you're responsible for it. You can't just say, one of these days I'll get better. I mean, you have to change. I mean, I'm going to be really honest with you. This morning, I opened the top drawer to my chest of drawers. I was getting out stuff, you know, and it just looked like a mess in there. And I said to myself, you are nearly a 60-year-old man, and your drawers look like a teenager's. You know, and I mean, I'm not condemning myself. I'm just saying, I've got to change that. I've got to do better. And I'm not trying to speak legalism. I'm just saying, I actually had this thought today, like, this is ridiculous that you're standing here trying to find black socks. At your age, this should be a no-brainer. And that means I've got to do something about it. I can't wait for, you know, a revival. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, then do something about it. You know, you know what you need to do. Get it together. This is ridiculous for your drawers to look like this at your age. You're a senior citizen. Organize your freaking drawers. Sock drawer. Organize your sock drawer. Well, let he who has ears. Anyway, I do want to, well, before I share the scripture, what we talked about the last 2 weeks is finding that kind of sweet spot between I am who I am and this is who God made me and it's good, or I need to be a better version of myself. Which is the truth? Well, there's a, like, draw a circle around that absolute and draw a circle around that absolute, and where those circles intersect, that's what I'm talking about this week. It's like loving who you are as you are, but know that, I mean, my sock drawer may not look great, but I'm about to preach you a life-changing message, and in a couple of hours, I'm going to do a wedding for somebody that's going to be memorable, like it was last night. People lined up and said to me, oh my God, I've never been to a wedding like that. I'm like, I know, you're welcome. That's what I do. I didn't say that, but I'm thinking, there's some things I can't do, but by God, I can do this. I know where my strengths are. That doesn't mean I'm perfect. So it's finding that place of being confident with who you are, owning your life, owning your mistakes or whatever, but know that there is room for improvement. I find that some people preach either one of those two extremes. Either this is who I am, you better like it, which I don't think that's good for anybody. I think if you live to be 120 on your last day, you should still be wanting to improve yourself and wanting to know more and wanting to learn. I don't think that should ever stop. I really think the best way to push back against the aging process is to want to do better and be better. You never are done. You're always a work in progress. But that doesn't mean that you're down on yourself. The reason I can't get into a lot of worship music anymore is I find that so many of the lyrics say something like, I know I always disappoint you. I know you're always, every day I make you cry. I don't relate to that. I don't think I'm making God cry every day. I mean, that's, first of all, I don't think I'm that bad. Secondly, I don't think God's that delicate. I mean, it's like, I think God knows who I am. So this whole thing about the only way I can show God how great he is how to admit how terrible I am, that does not resonate with me at all. So, you know, if that's what you want to sing, fine. But that's even, you know, the guy, we did so many of his songs. He's a great songwriter, but so many people love that song, you know, If Not For Grace, I'm a Hopeless Case. I find it difficult to sing those words. I thank God for his grace. That's wonderful. But I don't want to think that I'm just a hopeless case. I thank God for unconditional love, but I want to think there's something about me that people could love with conditions. You know, it's like, I love you because, not just like, I'm going to love you unconditionally, as horrible as you are. I don't want to think that God just has to stomach me through the blood of Jesus. Like, I can't bear to look at you, but somehow through the cross. I mean, like, that just doesn't feel like the way a creator would feel. I mean, I loved all four of my kids before they were born. And that doesn't mean I like everything they've ever done. It doesn't mean we haven't had issues that we've had to work out. It just means they were already in. They didn't have to do anything to gain my approval or have right standing. Just the fact that they were mine. And I keep seeing more and more people that I mostly only know through Facebook, some of whom aren't quite where I am theologically, but I notice the ones who seem to be more and more enlightened are writing things like what I've been teaching you that will never trivialize the cross, but we do put it in perspective. The cross wasn't for God's sake, it was for man's sake, for people who believed they were fallen. They needed a God figure that came in the flesh to identify with them. But it wasn't God already, the God who said, "Who told you you were naked," never saw the fall the way man saw the fall. He came to walk with Adam in the cool of the day, just like always, with or without the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I'm finding more and more people who are saying that. They might not be saying everything that I'm saying, but they're definitely moving in that direction. As I explained it earlier in a conversation this week, I said I can see some people who are up the road a little bit from where I'm at. I can see things that they teach. I think, I'm not quite there yet. But then I look at other people that are a little behind, and I think, well, you'll get there. I mean, we're all moving toward the light. And what we used to call or be afraid of is deception. Now we realize, no, it really is the light. It really is all eyes seeing him together. It is every knee bowing, every tongue confessing. And that is happening. Sometimes it doesn't look like it's happening, but it is. That being said, let me show you. I wanted to show you this whole chapter, but it gets overpowering when I show a whole chapter on the screen. Let me show you a verse, but before I do, let me give you a little context. Paul's writings were letters to churches. Most of them were administrative. I think he'd be shocked and maybe horrified that people have made his letters into something that he probably never thought they would become. I'm not saying they're not inspired, but he himself admitted there's a lot of me in this. I mean, sometimes he would even specify. He'd say, what I'm telling you is not commandment of the Lord. This is my opinion, which is fine. Paul paid a price for what he did, so he had a right to having an opinion. But he also discerned, I'm not saying God's telling you this. Like, if I say women should stay silent in the church, that's my own prejudice I'm working through. But then other times you would read, he'd say something like, in Christ there's neither male nor female. So for him, that was a very evolved statement for somebody who clearly was a product of his times. The wedding I did last night, the wedding I'm doing today is Deidre and Deshaun who come here, but the wedding I did last night was a same-sex couple, and I said this, it was two women, and I said, before I perform this wedding, I said, I probably don't have to say this, but I feel like I should in these settings. When people say, is this okay with God, or is this biblical? Is biblical marriage? I said, biblical marriage was a man having a harem and Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. There, you know, so if you want to say traditional marriage, okay, but even traditional marriage in our context is a relatively new idea. The idea of marrying for love, that's a, that idea has only been around for a couple hundred years. I mean, there was a time that, you know, marriages were arranged, and it didn't matter what you thought about the person, that you married who you were told to marry. And I said, you know, there was an idea about, I mean, Moses said, if your daughter's raped, you can sell her to the rapist for a reduced price. Women were considered property in the Bible. So if you say biblical marriage, nobody wants biblical marriage. Ladies, let me tell you what biblical marriage was. Biblical marriage was a husband giving you a writ of divorcement because he was tired of you, and that just meant he could absorb the dowry that your daddy gave to him, and you were just, you were out of luck. I mean, there was no alimony or child support. Even when Abraham kicked out Hagar and Ishmael, there was no child support. It was just like she had to figure it out, you know? So under biblical marriage, if you got tired of it, you didn't get a lawyer. The lawyer would have been on the man's side. I mean, the women didn't even have an opinion. So I said, you know, this is God okay with this? Look, is God okay? How do we answer that with all kind of things that have gone on in history? Even, I know when I talk about stuff like this, it's like speaking against Christmas. I walked my own daughter down the aisle. I know, I understand the father-daughter connection, but even with that, you're saying I'm giving her away. That comes from an idea of when women were property. Like, you know, I'm walking her down the aisle. I don't even know her name, but here she's yours now. She's your, I know in modern context, that's not the way women think of it, but that's what that means. You know, I'm giving you away. You are a piece of property that I'm giving to another man. What? I mean, if you're going to have your dad walk you down there, I'll come up with another term for it. He's giving me away. Really? Are you a piece of property you can be given away? That just got too real. Oh, you just got too real. You're not going to talk about my daddy walking me down there. I know, sweetie. I'm just saying I did it too. I did it too with tears in my eyes, but I also know it came from a time when, you know, there was a reason why that woman wore that white dress, because if he thought you didn't deserve to wear it, you weren't going to be part of the harem. Oh, I just got too real, and I'm not even to my first point yet, and I'm already too real. What the? Don't shout me down just because I'm preaching good. Just because I got this collar on. By the way, the question was asked today about this collar. It doesn't matter. This is a Protestant collar. I have a Catholic collar that I have worn in other countries, but just so you know, it's supposed to be like this. There's, every time I do a wedding, there's always somebody who says, "Can I please fix your chain that's been wet?" No, it goes over your heart because the bishop gives his life for the church. Get your hands off my chain. There's always somebody like, "I've been wanting to fix this the whole time." Well, no, I know what my clothes look like. Don't touch me. Yeah, it better be clergy appreciation. Anyway, cleansing breath. What Paul says at the end of this letter, 1 Corinthians, it's really, if you read it as a letter, because the chapters and verses weren't included until about the 3rd century. There was a French monk that divided them up in chapters and verse. And, you know, it's a convenient way to locate what you're looking for. But you also miss a lot when you see it broken up as chapters and verses. And I think the chapters and verses have sort of buttressed the idea that the Bible's this rule book. It's not a book. The Greek word tabiblia, it's the Spanish word biblioteca, it's a library. It is a collection of thoughts. Is there contradiction? Oh my God, if you don't know there's contradiction, you clearly haven't read it. These people that have, you know, different ideas of God were contradicting. I mean, Paul and Jesus sound like they're talking about two complete different ideologies about everything. And so Paul was an incredible writer. He was Israel's answer to Socrates and Plato from Greece and Rome, and he was schooled under Gamaliel. So he was a brilliant man, but very conflicted, very influenced by Moses' law. inner conflict with his revelation that fought with his tradition. And on a couple occasions, you know, after he has this big revelation about men don't need to be circumcised anymore, he still circumcises Timothy after he meets him. So you could see he's battling. You know, like if you ever hear me teach something that sounds really unchristian, and you're like, is this okay? You're not the first one to think that. Paul would second guess his own revelation and then go back and undo something that he had told other churches not to do. It's because he was a real person who was very conflicted, and you have to remember that when you read his writings. When somebody wants to say to me, well, the Bible says so, I'm like, well, Paul said that in a particular context. Don't tell me that God said that. Well, you're saying the Bible's not the Word of God? The Bible doesn't claim to be the Word of God. I mean, that's like this bibliolatry is a kind of a recent ideology. These were people who, and I promise you, these writers would agree with me if they were standing here, that they gave their understanding of God and transcendence in their day and age, and there is eternal wisdom in it. And I do love the scriptures, but you've got to keep them in context. And so Paul writes this. There's a lot of 1 Corinthians that he actually retracts in 2 Corinthians. Like, you know, in 1 Corinthians, he tells them to kick that. There's an incestuous couple that's living in it, that's in church, and he says, I can't believe you've let them stay in your church. You need to kick them out and turn them over to the destruction of the flesh. And the next letter, he totally takes it back. He says, you know what? I've thought differently of that. He said, let them back in lest they be overtaken with too much sorrow. Not that they repent. He said, this was really none of your business. Man, I wish the Christians would read that Bible that they think they're defending. All these people that said, like I heard this, one of these guys that was fighting over the Ten Commandments, one of these, we're not going to take the Ten Commandments out. And the guy said, can you name any of the Ten Commandments? Couldn't name one. I mean, most people at least know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. I mean, he's having a big fight trying to get legislation to not take the Ten Commandments off the wall. You even know what they are. Like some of the people that fight over ideas like the Bible and God and country, they don't even know what they're talking about. You know, read a little something and it'll put some things in perspective for you. Anyway, Paul ends this letter, and there's some beautiful parts to it. You know, what we call 1 Corinthians 13 is the love chapter. That was in there. And what we know about the gifts of the Spirit, that was chapter 14. When he gets to chapter 15, he says this amazing thing that for Paul is very self-reflective. The original disciples really kind of never did accept him as one of them. And partly that was because of him. You know, when he got converted, he didn't go to Jerusalem and study under them. He goes to Arabia. I mean, so not only did they not believe in his conversion, he wasn't, you know, handpicked by Jesus. He didn't even do it the right way. So they never full. I mean, they, you know, you could see that Peter and Paul finally met each other and spent about 3 weeks together. You see a little writing about that in Galatians. But they never really did accept him. And you can see in his writings, he was always a little bit defending himself. Before I show you this verse, let me just say, we all want people to think the best of us. The reason you pick a nice picture for your profile on Facebook is because you want to. You're advertising for yourself. I mean, you just are. And there's, you could say, well, I don't have an ego. Yeah, there is something. You post a picture, it's nice when people go, oh, your hair looks really good. Or you're like, yeah, that is a very human thing. So we're on some level, all of us want to be accepted. We all want people to know I'm okay, and you know, here's the pictures of my vacation. Do you like it? I mean, some people say, well, you need approval. Of course you do. Everybody needs approval. I love that when we're somewhere and we post a picture. Like, oh, it's so beautiful where you are. Ah, makes me enjoy it even more. I mean, don't you enjoy it? I mean, I think Ken's more excited about my new car than I am, and it makes me love, because he loves cars and knows things about it I wouldn't have noticed. He's made me love my car because he's like, man, I just love this car. And I'm like, yeah, I do too. I didn't realize how much I loved it. But now that I see it through your eyes, you're making me see a different perspective because you know things about cars I don't know. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know it did that. And you know, even last night we were finding stuff that it still does, and you know, we haven't figured out. It's cool. So we all need that. Even Paul needed that. And this verse I'm going to show you, it's a powerful verse, but it's even more powerful when you have context. Because he says, he's wrapping it up, and he talks about Jesus, and he says Jesus was crucified, and he was resurrected on the third day. And this is, you know how when we say Jesus appeared to over 500 people? This is where this comes from. He says, in a few verses before this, he says he first appeared, he calls him Cephas, which is kind of interesting. He doesn't call him Peter. I'm like, oh, Paul, y'all got some drama going on. Because Jesus said, I call you Peter on this rock. And Paul said, Cephas. You know, it's like when your mom and them call you your real name, you know, to bring, sort of bring you back down a peg. Oh, don't act like your name ain't Cephas. So he says, he appears first to Cephas, and then to the other disciples, then to 500. And then he says something really interesting. He says, and finally to me, lastly to me who was born, I think King James says, I was born out of season. And then he says, and I am the least of the apostles because I persecuted the church of God. You know, we don't know how many people he actually had martyred, but he was trying to. And he was definitely getting people arrested. And you know, he tried to single-handedly stamp out Christianity. And there was a part of him that never got over that. He's, you know, he said, I'm never going to fully forgive myself for that. And he says, I am the least of the apostles. But in that context, this is what he says. And it's a very touching thing that he says. This is 1 Corinthians 15:10. He says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace toward me was not in vain. Because he goes on to say, because I feel so horrible about what I did work harder than the other ones. He said, I'm not trying to say that I'm better than them, but I worked harder because I had a bigger debt to pay. You know what? I get that. There's something about owning your life, and if you make a mistake, yeah, it's good to forgive yourself, but it's also good to realize that you may have really hurt somebody. I remember a woman came to me one time who had an abortion and years ago, and I never was that vocal about it, but I know a lot of pastors would just be on it Sunday after Sunday about, you know, you murdered babies and stuff. She was saying, it's so hard for me to go to church and have to hear this. And so I'm, you know, Mr. Grace, I'm like, look, you know, it's forgotten. You know, you were in a situation, whatever. And she said something that really made me think. She says, I understand what you're saying, and I don't think I'm going to hell or anything. She says, there's a part of me that never wants to totally make peace with that. And I got what she was saying. She was saying, I don't feel good about that, and I thank you for your words of grace, but I do, if I had to do over again, I would do it differently. And I said, you know, touche. I understand what you're saying. I get that. I mean, there's a balance between saying I'm forgiven, or even like if somebody gets out of prison, they've paid their debt to society. It still did a number on them. You don't just skip out of prison and go la la la. That never happened. No, it definitely happened, and you're going to carry that with you for the rest of your life. It's unrealistic for people not to think that. And let me tell you one reason I love the message of ultimate reconciliation. I think it forces people to be better people. And I'll tell you why. For all the people that believe in hell, the traditional fundamentalist Christian view of hell, what they say to me is, well, you can't tell me Hitler's in heaven. I'm like, I know, that sounds bizarre to think of that. That's not the way I would phrase it. What I'm saying is, I don't think people are eternally punished, regardless of what they did. And to which they'll say, well, he could go to heaven if he repented and confessed Jesus. There's something about it that seems really, I'd rather just believe in ultimate reconciliation. Because there's something about, oops, I killed 6 million Jews, but I'm sorry, and then you get to go to heaven. That really kind of ticks me off. I would rather to think that somewhere in eternity, if you met him, you'd be like, wow, what you did was really horrible. But, you know, what we all did was really horrible. And so, you know, according to God logic, if you've hated your brother, you've murdered him. So if you're a racist that hates an entire people group because of the color of their skin, you're basically Hitler, according to what... Oh, I'm just saying... I would rather people have to be better people than just like, I can do whatever I want to do. And then I go, oops, I confess my sin and I'm in heaven, la, la, la. Something about that really creeps me out. I would rather you kind of own what you did so that it kind of makes you want to be a better person, right? And then when you do mess up, yeah, surely goodness and mercy do follow you all the days of your life. Thank God for his mercy, because we do all mess up. But this idea that, you know, as long as you just got to say that mantra before you die, that's just, it's just unrealistic. You know, I remember, I've told you this before, but I remember it wasn't even our service. It was somebody else rented out the church. And a lot of people there, and it was a very traditional, it was Southern Baptist that had it. And this one guy said, if you're here and you don't know Jesus, raise your hand. So out of, I don't know, 2,000 people, like three people raised their hand. And he said, if you raise that hand, now you'll spend eternity in heaven. And I thought, wow, really? That was it? Just raising it? You're like, what is it like? Hell, 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 heaven. Like what? What, like, what if you didn't have an arm? What if you lost an arm? And what if you had bursitis and you couldn't raise your arm? You'd be like, you're nearly in heaven. Like, oh, come on a little higher. Like, oh, we're going to burn you in hell for eternity. Because if you could have just gotten that up a little higher, nearly heaven, not hell. And, you know, like, wow. So, you know, you're in hell with Hitler and, you know, Mussolini and everybody. I'm like, what are you in here for? I didn't raise my hand high enough. I tried to, and I just get, it just gets absurd after a while. I mean, I've been in situations where people said, you know, squeeze the hand of the person next to you. If you squeeze that hand, you're good. I mean, honestly, if that's what you think, I'd rather see old school go to the altar and at least cry and have some godly sorrow. At least you have some humiliation, not just squeeze somebody's hand. I mean, if that's what it is, then let's have a show. You know what I mean? You know, put some drugs on the altar or do something. Anyway, I just think I love this statement because he says, I did all this. He says, he's not denying it. He said, no, I'm the least of the apostles because I persecuted the church of God, but I am what I am. It's nearly my favorite Pauline statement because it's him saying, I embrace what I did. I don't even try to defend it. I am what I am, and I've tried to, when he said, he goes on to say, I therefore worked harder. He's basically saying, I used this horrible thing that I did to make me a better person. I got to tell you, I respect that more than him just saying, la, 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 I know I killed your mama because she was a Christian, but I asked Jesus to forgive me, so I'm just, no, he says, no, I'm always going to carry this around that I, you know, and this is the man who said, if any man's in Christ, he's a new creature. That was in 2 Corinthians 5:17. But he's saying, I am what I am. God made me like I am. That's if you don't get anything else I say this month, get this. It's saying, it doesn't mean I like everything that I did, but I am what I am by the grace of God. And I am working on it. And the things that I've done that I could possibly beat myself up for, instead of me just sitting around hating myself, I'm trying to be proactive. And I'm trying to use, it's like, I love when I see somebody that, like if they were abused as a child, they grow up and they become a champion for abused children. Even though it wasn't their fault, I love that they take a horrible situation and say, I'm going to cause this to motivate me to see that this doesn't happen to other kids. That's what bad things should do for you. I mean, if you feel negative about something that happened to you, then become an activist. Do something to change the situation. And that's kind of what Paul is saying here. So I'm going to move fast, but let me show you. This is John Newton, who, of course, no, he's the one that wrote Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound. Most people say is their, except for Eddie Sellers, most people say is their favorite hymn. But, you know, most of us that grew up in especially in Protestant churches or churches in the Bible Belt, grew up singing "That Saved a Wretch Like Me." So that the energy on that word "wretched" is something we've all connected with, and it is a beautiful song. There's a energy on "Amazing Grace." It sends me mixed signals because it has some baggage to it, but it also is very beautiful. And there are times I've heard it where it really touched me and caused me to tear up. Understand, John Newton was a slave trader who believed he was a Christian, and it never occurred to him that buying and selling people was wrong. Now, we look at it and go, how did you not know that? This is why theology is so powerful. I know I've said this before, and don't get weird on me when I say it. Just let me make this point. But there's a line in the Huckleberry Finn. You know, when Huck Finn is friends with Jim, you know, okay? And there's a line that's so telling. He says, I hear Jim laying on the floor in the next room crying. He said, I suppose he's missing his family like I miss mine. And he says, but I'm afraid I'm going to go to hell for thinking that. Now, the white people who owned black people said, oh, it doesn't matter if you sell somebody's children or something. They're like dogs that if you take puppies out of the litter, they don't remember them later. Now, that's a horrible thing to say, but that's what people thought. At least that's what my ancestors said they thought. It's hard in our world, it's hard to believe. How could you possibly think that? You remember in 12 Years a Slave, remember when in the opening scene where the woman's crying because she's missing her babies, and they're like, how can you miss them? That was in the white theology to say, no, these people, they don't have souls or spirits like you do, so don't think of them. Otherwise, how can you get your head around slavery if you don't create a theology that's going to help you live with yourself to do that? Now, I know that's a very dark thing to say. I know I just took you from making you laugh to that, because that's a horrible, even as a white man, that's a horrible thought. I can't imagine how black people feel about it. So when John Newton says, Amazing Grace, I don't feel wretched when I sing that. I'm like, John Newton, you were wretched. I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I didn't buy and sell people in the Middle Passage. So if you notice, I ever sing that song, I drop out on that line. Because I'm like, no, you did. And if you know the story of John Newton, they made a movie about it in a Broadway show. He did actually become part of the abolitionist movement or whatever. He did have a transformation. So, okay, good. But that's your vision. That's your experience. You were wretched. So when he says, I was blind, but now I see. Buddy, in this day and age where racism is still alive and well, a lot of blind people still need to see. I'm sorry. And I know I will get passive-aggressive messages on Facebook when I say this, but I'm going to say, white people, if an African-American player takes a knee, you don't need to put pictures of Iwo Jima and your daddy who was in the war. They're not talking about the flag. They're not disgracing the flag. They're saying, please stop killing my brothers. Who now? Look, if a black man fires on a white cop, yes. But when most of these black guys that have been killed, I'm sorry, they were unarmed. They were shot for nothing. And these white cops don't even get a slap on the wrist. I know a lot of you that used to go to church now are going to be mad at me. Fine, unfriend me. I'm just telling you, if that's something you have a problem with, let me tell you something. The reason we have a flag, the reason we have a constitution, is so that people can protest. That's what makes us different from communist nations. Even if you don't like it, I don't like to see the flag burned. It creeps me out. But the Supreme Court, that's largely conservative, defended it and said, yes, we hate it, but that's what makes us America, so that people can do it. Even if we hate it. You know the old saying, I may hate what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. So It's time for, as bad as some things are right now, it's time for things to come to the surface and realize, like, yeah, there's some things that need to be looked at. And I know, you know, I'm going to get people saying, well, you know, about the Confederacy or whatever. Look, there's the Civil War was about slavery. It just was. When you read the things that Jefferson Davis said about it, it's clear. He says, we are, you know, we are fighting to preserve our right to slavery. I mean, there's no gray area. You know, when the president was saying, you know, that could have been avoided. We got to figure out what was that about. Like, what was it about? What was it about? Seriously, you don't know? And, you know, I'm just going to, for those of you who may be watching today who disagree with me, and I read the stuff you write on other people's pages, I know what you think. Believe me, I know. I hope you can hear me in the spirit. And if I really am a spiritual voice to you, give some heed to what I'm saying. Because this isn't just liberal babble. I love this country. And furthermore, I believe the people that protest in their own way, they love it too. That's why they want it to be a better version of this country. I didn't plan on saying any of that. But I mean, I stand by it. Yeah, this collar. What does this collar do to me? But that's what your aunt, that was the ideal of America that your uncle and grandfather fought for. I keep seeing people posting, you know, my daddy died in the war. That's what he's fighting for, is so that we can have a First Amendment, that other people can say stuff that you might not like, but that's why we're all Americans. We don't all have to agree on everything. Just read the Constitution. Because if you, listen, you may not want the First Amendment because you don't like what somebody else is saying something. You're not going to like it when it's not there. And you can't say what you want to say. Or somebody start telling you what you can and can't do, what you can and can't believe. You better want. And with that, it's like, let me tell you something. The Constitution is like anything. Like, money's great. Money can do bad things. The internet is awesome. The internet's got horrible things to it. So the Constitution, because it does give us rights, yeah, there are. It's going to bring some things that you're not going to like, that you're not going to see. You're just not. Even today, you know, trying to get through the gay pride parade, I'm looking at, you know, these guys on a float, and even I'm like, oh, good Lord, haven't we made our point? Go home and get out of my way. I'm trying, you know what I mean? So I'm sure homophobic people feel that 1,000-fold. Like, what are y'all still marching about? It's because every once in a while you still hear about some hate crime somewhere or somebody trying to take away somebody's civil rights. So, yeah, as obnoxious as it is to see a little guy in a tutu on a float, let him do his thing, because this is America and you don't have to like it. If you don't like it, you don't have to go to the parade. It'll be over with this afternoon. Well, I think there's going to be men kissing each other. Most likely, yeah, it's a gay pride parade. I'm just amazed at the stuff that people, like, now that y'all have opened this can of worms. It's like when people say to me, you live in the city? Yeah. You couldn't pay me to live in the city. Well, I'm not offering to pay you. I didn't even ask you to visit. You don't have to have an opinion. Isn't it real crowded? Yeah, it's a city. A lot of traffic. Yeah, it's a city. It's a city and indigent people come up and ask you for money all the time and there's traffic jams. What's your point? It's like when I go to, we're going to New York for Christmas. People go, you go at Christmas time? Oh my God. Isn't it crowded? Terribly. What's your point? It's a madhouse. What's your point? Well, it's a lot of people. Right. It's New York at Christmas. Everybody wants to go there and see the Christmas light. You couldn't pay. Not offer. Nobody's writing you a check. You just sit right there in your house, and nobody's going to even invite you. Nobody's going to even know that you're not there. You don't have to have an opinion about everything. I mean, unless it directly affects you. I was thinking about, because going down 19 yesterday, we went by the Hampton Speedway. And I know that's something that Ken likes. And I remember the first time when we first met online, one of the things he listed is he likes NASCAR. I said, I'm going to tell you something before we meet. I'm never going to go watch cars ride around the circle all day. I'm never going to. But if you want to go with your guys from work, that's fine with me. Just don't, that's something that's non-negotiable for me. I'm just not, because I'm going to make you have a terrible time. You need to go with guys that are going to love it. And if you love it, I mean, I meant to say it to you yesterday, but I was screaming at you to, like, go drive, run the red light. But if you want to go with your guys, seriously, I'm fine with it. There's some things I might be interested in. Some things I'm like, no, I wouldn't be interested in that at all. But if you want to do it, you should do it. I don't need to say, you couldn't pay me, because nobody's offering to pay me to go watch NASCAR. You just do your thing, stay in your lane. It's called America. And whatever email you're already typing, that whatever unpatriotic thing I said, just delete it, because I'm not even going to read it. You should know, I get about two lines into it, I'm like, I don't. I have a filter on me that doesn't even let it get into my spirit, so save your energy. But here's what John Newton said. He says, I'm not what I ought to be. I'm not what I want to be. I'm not what I hope to be in another world. But still, I'm not what I once used to be, and by the grace of God, I am what I am. All right, you know what? Fair enough, John Newton. I hate that you were a slave trader, but you admitted it. You owned it. At least people could learn from your mistake and not defend it. And so I think there's a part of all of us can relate to this a little bit. All of us can say, yeah, well, you know, yeah, I'm a work in progress, but in the meantime, I'm pretty awesome. I kind of think of it as like a masterpiece painting that you can see what it is. Maybe it needs a few things on it, but it's a masterpiece, and you can tell it's a masterpiece. That's the way I feel that we all are. We're a masterpiece. There's some editing and some tweaking that still needs to be done, but the basic masterpiece is there, and I really think you have to embrace that about yourself. Let me run through these quickly. I like this quote by her. She says, when you are aligned with the truth of who you truly are, then you experience bliss. I completely agree with that. I think if you're in your element, that's where happiness comes. Unhappiness comes, well, you know, Friday night, this past Friday was the 7th anniversary of my coming out publicly. And I was thinking a lot about it, and I thought a lot about it the other day. Thank you for the beautiful things that you wrote on my blog and on Facebook. And I was thinking about, I remember about a year before, I'd never thought of this before, but I remember I was standing at the sink washing a dish, and I just thought, I'm not going to live long. And I'd never thought that before, and I thought, where did that come from? And I had gotten to a place of fatigue in my life of trying to be somebody that I was not. This is not about sex. This is about identity, of just being able to be who you are. When Debbie and I saw each other Friday night, we were good with each other. We'd already texted each other during the day. I thanked her. I said, thank you for helping make that possible 7 years ago today. She said, happy coming out day. We're fine with it. We live separate lives now. We do. I mean, we have to. But we're good with each other. We're not, I mean, you can see the pictures. I'm sitting between her and Ken, and everybody's talking. We're like, nobody's weird with each other. And I'm in my bliss because it's not that I had a horrible life with her. It's just, I'm myself now. And that has nothing to do with her. That's not a reflection on her or even Jared and Christina's mom for that matter. It's a matter of being who you are. And until you are actually who you are, I'm telling you, there are so many people that have unnecessarily sickness and die prematurely, whatever, just because they just can't be who they are. And that's I'm not limited to that sexual orientation. That may be about any number of things about you. And you know what I love nearly more than anything else is when a straight person writes me and says, you inspire me to be myself. It's for a different reason, but you inspire me to be authentic. I'm like, well, good. good. That was worth anything that I went through. I don't even consider anything that I lost anymore because I don't even think of it that way anymore. I just think it's just a different incarnation now. Anyway, I could say more about it, but this is an interesting interesting concept. You know, you've heard the saying, I think, therefore I am. What he challenged it by saying, I think, therefore I am. No, I simply am. I am. I am. I am. I will still be if I didn't think. In fact, it is only then that I would step into a different dimension of consciousness. Yes, I will still be if I didn't think. I will still be if I stopped breathing. I will still be because you still are. My words are written and you are receiving them. We are dancing. We are making love. And when you stop reading them, they will still be because nothing ever truly ceases to exist. There is not a thing that is not. Every thought, energy, and vibration is recycled. I am and I will continue to be because I manifest as the universe. Therefore, I will continue to manifest as the universe. Now, that's a very... I know that's a very out there concept, but man, I read that over and over again. I just love that. You know, there's an Acura commercial. I think it's Acura. It's some car they keep advertising, and the voice says, I am Acura. I am. They just keep saying, I am. It sounds like they're going to say, I am that I am. But there's something. So I was reading something yesterday about even when you say the word I, there's like billions of neurons that connect to manifestation. Just even before you get to the am part, just when you say I, it automatically attracts all this energy to it so that everything you say about yourself is a prophecy that you're fulfilling just constantly. Even the things you casually say. That's why, you know, just don't say what you think is the negative stuff. Most people aren't going to notice it anyway. Just keep talking about the good stuff. And the people go, wow, it really is all good, isn't it? Yes. Look at the shiny object over here. Eckhart Tolle says, "I think this is good. What a liberation to realize that the voice in my head is not who I am. Who am I then? The one who sees that. That's why in quantum physics you hear so much about the observer effect. They're still not sure what is it exactly that sees." There is this essence about you that existed before you collapsed into this body, into this present consciousness. And really, when someone, what we consider dies, really the better way to say it is they no longer need this body. But they continue to exist. This body was not working for them anymore, so they laid it down. But they are just as alive as they ever were. And really, that's what he was singing about, I'll fly away. It's like, it's not my body will fly away, I'll fly away. When this body serves me no longer, and I'm gonna drive this car, you know, as long as I can. I just traded in a car that had, what, I have 160,000 miles on it? And it was still running good. Ernie says I could have gone to 350 before getting a new transmission. But, I mean, I kept it up, you know, because if you keep changing the oil, you could do it. And I considered it. I mean, I did consider it. But that's the way I feel about your body. It's like you just keep whatever your oil change is, you keep doing it. Do you know what I mean? And I want to try to stay here as long as I can because I love it. I want to be an old man and create a new definition of what it means to be old. I want to be the new, like, oh, this is what 60 should look like. This is what 70 should look like. This is what 80 should look like. And I'm not condemning other people that don't walk in that, but that's what I think, all right, I'm compassionate to you, but my situation is going to be different. And I'm going to do certain things to make sure that it is. I mean, I'm going to eat right and all that kind of stuff, and I could lose some pounds, but it's mainly up here. I'm gonna keep thinking the right things and saying the right things. And so when I say 60 is the new 30 or 70 is the new 40, I'm not just being funny. I'm like, no, let's go as long as we possibly can. But when the wheels finally do come off, do you know what I mean? then let's go to the funeral and say, well, they drove it till they couldn't drive it any longer, and it served them well. I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, if I can just torture this metaphor, when they took my car, you know, after I traded in my car and they drove the other one off, I mean, I had a little moment of, wow, I had a lot of memories in that car. That car represented a lot to me. I was proud of the fact that it was paid off and all that kind of, you know, like I had a little moment, you know. And so when something like when your daddy passes away or whatever, or your sister, like you experience, yeah, it's emotional. But it doesn't mean they have ceased to exist. It means they've laid it down, and you'll catch up with them later when you lay yours down. Now, in the meantime, while I still got the car, let's drive down to the beach for a couple of days while I still got it. I'm all about that bucket list. Like, let's do all the stuff we wanted to do. That's a good one. This I've quoted this poet many times, but I like this. It says, just look around. This immense universe is functioning so perfectly well that nothing can be added to it. It needs no improvement. Seeing this, one relaxes. If stars can go on dancing and flowers can go on blooming and birds can go on singing, why not you? You also belong to this universe. You know what the scripture says? Weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. In other words, you just keep going. You are a part of it. In fact, you are the most valuable part of it. The greatest flowering is going to happen in you, the flowering of consciousness, the golden flower of being. You know, if I do have an attraction to things Eastern, you know why? It's because there's something about Asian people who are enlightened. I love the way that they're serene and centered. There's something about that. There's different things. I mean, I love the way other people groups have different, you know, exuberance, whatever. I know this sounds like I'm stereotyping. I'm not trying to sound racist. I'm just saying there is a beautiful thing about Asian culture that's very, it's about being placid and about, you know what I mean? I mean, I know there's war and all that kind of stuff too, but I mean, the religions of the East are very much about be centered and be quiet and be still. And there's something very attractive about that. Christians, dear Lord, Christians are so loud and everybody's got to be praying all the time. And, you know, and it's too much. Even the worship, it's too much. Even God's like, enough already. I know I'm great. Stop. Go change the world. God, you are great. No, just go help a poor person. Go make the world a better place. No, I just want to spend hours in worship. No, okay, whatever. Turn him down. I mean, you know what I mean. Am I being too real? Like, it's nice to hear your spouse say, I love you. If they were just every minute going, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. After a while, you'd be like, okay, I get it. Let's let's go get something to eat. Don't say it again. Let's maybe go for a walk or something. All right, and then finally, I love this. This is, you know, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. I like the way the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament says it. This is John chapter 18, verse 4 through 6. It says, then Jesus, having seen and being aware of all the things progressively coming upon him, went out and proceeds, saying to them, whom are you folks presently seeking? You know, this is when the guards come to arrest him. They decidedly replied, Jesus the Nazarene. He then says to them, I am, or I myself am, or I am being. Now, Judas, the one handing him over, had also been standing with them. Then as he said to them, I myself am, or I am continuous existence, he went off into the rear and they suddenly fell to the ground. That's amazing that just there was something about the power of him saying, I know this is coming on me and I'm not fighting it now because I just am. I tell you, the closest thing to this, if you ever listen to Dr. King's speech the night before he was shot, when he's at that church in Memphis And you can tell, I mean, he had so many death threats on him. Like, you could tell he had kind of made peace with it. And he says, longevity has its place, but I'm not worried about that now. I'm not fearing any man. That's where he says, my eyes have seen the glory. And he says, I may not get there with you, but we as a people will get there. It's really, it's eerie and it's inspirational because you can tell he's laid his life down already. I mean, it's nearly like he walks into the fire because you could tell that is a man who's at peace with himself. He's at peace with his purpose. You know, if you thought, what would I be like the night before I got shot? I'd be frantic. Well, he wasn't. He was like, this is probably going to happen, and I'm at peace with it. And he kind of made peace with being a martyr is really what he had done. And go back, you can find it on YouTube, that speech is, and I'm not saying that we should go get killed. I'm saying there's something about entering into I am. I don't have to, I want you to love me. Yeah, I want you to approve of me. Yeah. But even if you don't, I am. And that is a higher existence. All right. Did you get anything out of this today? Do I have time? I think I've got time for one. We'll do one quick meditation, and then we got to get on the road. But I need it personally. So I think, can y'all meditate with me just for about, let's do, just find me about an 8-minute one or 8 or 9 minute, whatever you got. I think you all probably are cool with this. If you're not cool, feel free to leave now. Nobody will judge you. But we're going to, and if you're listening to the podcast, you can meditate with us. If you're watching on YouTube, you can meditate with us. Y'all are evolved enough. It doesn't take a long time to talk you into this. Just put both feet on the floor. If you can empty your lap, please do. And sit up straight. There's something about lining up your spinal column that's very important. You don't have to close your eyes, but it's probably going to be better if you do. You don't have to do a, what's the word that I, mudra, is that the word? You don't have to do that, but you can if you want to. There's nothing bizarre about it. It's just a point of energy. Go ahead and start the music. Mostly, you know this already, it's mostly about breathing. We're all in a good place. There's a lot of love in this room. And we have a lot of unity, so you'll get right in. Take a deep breath. It's mostly about your breathing. Preferences, inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth. Inhale, hold it. Exhale. If you're carrying a lot of stress, just exhale it out. I don't have to talk you through it, just do it. Just get it out of you. Sitting up straight, feet on the floor. Of just not thinking about anything. Inhale. Exhale stress. Inhale. Exhale anxiety. I like this music. It's good. Good, 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 good. Be consistent with your breathing. Thank you. your serenity. Find your peace. Most of you are already there. Just connect with consciousness. Connect with the now. Connect with the I am. Stress, not just out of your lungs, but out of your bones and your joints and your organs, out of your brain, out of the top of your head, out of your eyes, out of your ears. Breathe out of your pores. Breathe out of your existence. Breathe out of the part of you that was here before you were in a physical body. Out of that part of you that will continue after this physical body is no longer functioning. Good one. Good, good, good. Just come out of it gradually whenever you're ready. It doesn't take a long time. It's good. You can bring the lights back up. Everybody good? I love it. Your faces are so beautiful right after you meditate. I love it. There's just a real sweet innocence on your face that I really like. It's beautiful. It's the look of serenity. Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? It was good today, right? What? Oh, man. Go ahead and run this if you would, please. And then we're gonna have to roll. Ken's not here and BJ's not here, so... So Freddie and Roz are going to need help.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form, and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page.
Easy peasy.
For additional information on your account, visit bishinthenow.com and click the support tab.
Visit it. Don't forget
then
to...
my online donation.
Reserve
when you contribute
your
to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, just make it to JESM, and Danny will receive that. If you have cash, pay it forward. Be a blessing to somebody. I love you so much. Thank you for coming every Sunday. I never take it for granted. I love you. And those of you who logged on, I love you. Don't be mad at me if you disagreed with me. Let it go. Even if you think I'm wrong, breathe it out. Go with God. Peace.